Roger Millions from Sportsnet, who just finished a piece on Mr. Jankowski. Am I safe in saying that there isn't consensus necessarily with everyone on Mr. Jankowski?
Well, I just think there's not enough information yet, Ryan. I think at the end of the day, he played prep school hockey in Quebec. He's played 1 year out of position at Providence College in Providence, Rhode Island. I think it takes more time than that. And there's no statistical analysis for those that love that. There's no real information on it other than the fact some of the scouts really like him.
Yeah, and he also had the interesting decision to elect to skip a year at Dubuque, which was his original plan before the draft in the USHL, which is a strong program there. He was then going to go to Providence the year after. So again, that also sort of muddies things up too, because he was probably making a bigger jump than most guys that showed up at Providence.
Made a good choice, Ryan. I don't know how much USHL hockey you had, but in the lock of 2005, I saw a number of games down in Iowa. And basically, Mark Jankowski would have been a giant among those guys. Those were the smallest hockey players I'd seen in a long, long time. They used to call it the Jockey League. Did you know that?
I did not, but I do know that it's churning out more and more talent that shows up in the NHL. But you're right. If you're a real good player in the USHL, you're probably off to play college at 18.
Yeah, for sure. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's great. It's a great breeding ground. But I think for Mark Jankowski, he made the right decision based on the fact he'll play against growing men, and he'll play in a competitive environment. An environment that, frankly, the hierarchy of the Flames, obviously, at this point, seems to really like.
Yeah, and then you mentioned growing men, and I think we could put Jankowski himself in that category. He certainly looked a lot beefier than the man we saw at development camp last year.
Yeah, he said he grew 14 pounds of muscle. He didn't even pay attention to it, he said. It was basically the regiment that he was put under, his eating habits, and some of the things he wanted. He really enjoys his coaching at Providence. But if here's a guy, they say he lists at 187. I'd like to take a look at that. Of course, we'll never know, Ryan. You know how that works.
Yeah.
They get the measurements behind closed doors. They tell the media what they want to tell us. And basically, that's what we know, what we're told. But I'm going to guess a little bit bigger than that right now, just because of his size. Having a chance to talk to him on a couple of occasions over the last week, that's a good sign. Because if he is indeed 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", he can probably carry 215 and carry it very well. So if he's 187, he's got room to grow.
Yeah, and I've done a little detective work myself, and my foggy math has gotten him to about 192 to 194. So I think we're on the same page here. He looked bigger than 187, but we're also looking at a dude with a jersey and equipment on. But the bottom line is that this is a long-term project. It was when they drafted him. So I suppose we're all a little anxious to judge sooner than we should.
Yeah, I think these things take time, especially when you're coming out of a prep school situation like that in Quebec. It's not the norm, and we sometimes, I think, forget in our business that it's black and white. We say, oh, it's always black and white. It's this stat, it's this analysis, it's that analysis. In this case, I don't think it's any of those things. I think it'll be a number of factors, from his maturity to his game to what he plays, how many minutes per night, what kind of positioning he is in terms of power play or five-on-five. That's what matters. He himself, he's a unique individual, not just from the pick, but everything on down.
And it seemed like Jay Feaster was challenging him in the piece that you've got running on Sportsnet today. Jay said he was happy with a lot of things and a lot of progression that Mark had made, but he also sort of had, I thought, gone a little bit out of his way to say we want him to try to take over games a little more and to try to dominate, rather, whereas last year he just had to try to fit in with that huge jump from high school hockey.
I think that's a good read, Ryan. I got that same feeling that they want more. They want him to be more aggressive, that his laid-back nature is one of those types of situations they'd like to see him grow out of, and he might. You know, once he gets over the wide-eyed positioning of where he is, and yet this summer something else happens when he's asked to come to the evaluation camp for Team Canada. So he is a kid that's wide-eyed. He's never experienced this kind of exposure. Now he's experiencing it. So we want him to become more, I guess, aggressive. Assertive is a good word, I think. MJ was very clear on that in my mind.
And that might just be a guy getting used to an extra 15 pounds that, hey, I can start running into people a little bit more.
Right. Well, or a willingness to that. Let's face facts. If you're going to prep school hockey in Quebec, what's the emphasis on physical aggressive play? Probably not that much. Now, I've watched a lot of NCAA hockey, and I can tell you that it's not always there as well. You don't always see that physical aggressive player. But maybe now, with the encouragement of his coach in Providence and what the Flames want, you'll see more of it from him.
Is the invite from Hockey Canada to this summer camp, is that a check mark in terms of another body in the nation identifying him as an elite talent, or is this a guy that you're probably not doing your homework if he's, you know, an 18-year-old freshman that you don't invite when in his 19-year-old year?
Either way, it doesn't hurt. But I would think recognition is a big factor here. Off the radar until last year. There's so much to watch, and I knew Kevin Prendergast when he was the head scout of Hockey Canada, and he was telling me how overwhelming it is at times to try to get a judgment on all of these kids in our country and where they're playing and how they're playing and how they're utilized. So finally had enough of a body of work, so to speak, to make an opinion on him. Now they'll see if he fits in. Does he fit in? Is he the kind of guy that can play that national junior kind of game, which I think is very unique and doesn't always lend itself to NHL players either?
No, that's true. I mean, you could think of a lot of guys that dominated that tournament, especially the goal position, that don't necessarily pan out. What would his role be if he could find one on the team? Because a top six center is going to be a real tough gig to get with the CHL's best up against him.
Well, I agree with you. I think that's going to be extremely difficult for him. I think he'd have to show the ability to win faceoffs, be very, I guess, methodical and trustworthy in his own end. And then, if he can show some playmaking ability, he might get an opportunity on a second power play, that kind of thing. But you're right, it's an uphill battle for that. But for him, the experience alone would be an advantageous situation. He would find out what it takes to play at an international level, and that can only help him.
What was the demeanor of Mr. Jankowski like? Did he seem like a guy that was more comfortable in his surroundings? I mean, it was a whirlwind 2 weeks last season with the draft and then development camp for a kid that might not have thought he was going to get drafted at all.
I thought he was much more easygoing. I know the attention wasn't so definitive on him. I'll be honest with you, Ryan. Last year, I thought Mark Jankowski was the best player at the entire Flames development camp. Now, others may not think so, but I saw him almost every day last year. This year, he had a lot of company, and maybe that was a good thing for him. As a result, he realized that, you know, here I am in the mix, but that's all I am. I'm in the mix, and the mix may be somewhere between 10 and 14 players. So at the end of the day, he appeared more comfortable to speak to, but it might be because his surroundings were a little easier to take this year.
It's an interesting topic because when you bring in Corbin Knight, you get Hanowski and Agostino in deals, Rito Barra shows up as part of a deal, and then you have three first-round picks. I suppose if he wasn't in a lot of company, the Flames would have to be pretty disappointed with what they'd done in the last 6 months.
Yeah, luckily they can forget about that. Luckily they can actually be pleased, and maybe, and I'm not speaking from any knowledge other than the fact what I saw, is the fact maybe they can be happier about what they've done to develop young players and recognize young players at this point. And I think it has to be clear to a lot of your listeners, is this is just visionary. All you are at this point is speculating. It's like speculating in the stock market. You think this is going to be good. You think there's going to be growth. You feel that all the ingredients are there. Well, what's really going to happen in the next 2 to 3 years? And no one has a crystal ball on that, especially with a bit of a wild card like this guy. So I think that's where it lies with him.
When people view that selection, the Flames traded down from, I believe, the 14 hole with Buffalo. They get a pick in the mid-20s as well as a second rounder. Do you think when people measure that move, when they look at a Zegras Girgensons or a Philip Forsberg, do they remember to include Pat Seeloff? Because to me, he's kind of the forgotten equation there. It wasn't Jankowski instead of one of these guys. It was Jankowski and Seeloff instead of picking at that 13-14 slot.
You're talking like a hockey guy. Stop that. People aren't going to recognize that. Well, that's exactly right. All of a sudden, you got yourself a two assets instead of one. You got yourself an asset that you felt very strongly about, and another guy who came with blue chip kind of credentials out of the U.S. You're absolutely right. So credit them. You know, instead of crapping on them. And I remember last year's telecast by the opposition, and I heard two or three of the guys, not the real expert. Bob McKenzie's a guy that never makes a mistake. I've got so much respect for him. But some of the other experts criticizing the move. You can't criticize those things because you're not speculating on what he is as a 17-year-old or going towards an 18-year-old. You're speculating what's he going to be like at 21 or 22. As it's turned out, it was a pretty good move. Plus, you got that asset of seal off it. We don't know really where he's going to go, but if I read between the lines of what Jay Feaster said yesterday, I get the feeling that Patrick Seeloff will be given every chance in the world to try and make the Calgary Flames this fall. He may not. He may wind up going back to Windsor. But they like him enough. They think he's worth a real hard look to see if he's a guy that could be a seven defenseman learning to be better than that.
Who are the other guys that are close? Because there's a lot. I mean, you look at the center position. After Matt Stajan and Michael Backlund, you're going to have a very, very young couple guys unless you're playing people out of position.
Well, let's just continue with the defense. I think Tyler Weatherspoon is really close. And he's one of those guys that you like. He's one of those quiet guys that just plays a methodical game. I'm going to compare him to Brent Seabrook just a little bit. I think he's that kind of player. He's maybe not as physical or nasty as Brent can be, but he's extremely good in his position. If you watch him break out of his own end, he seldom misses the first pass. He makes a very quick decision and throws it out fast. As far as up front's concerned, if you're talking center, I think, you know, whether people like it or not, they're pick sixth overall. They've got to look at this young man. I mean, let's face facts. He's a player that seems, in my opinion, Sean Monahan, that has the size. They say he's at almost 200 pounds now, and I believe it. I think he's got the potential over 2 months. Now that he knows what the pace is going to be, they got to look at him. So Sean Monahan for sure. Whether they go the other two fellows, I have a sense that Poirier and Klimchuk are back in junior, and maybe that's the best place for them. But up the middle, I think it's a real question. Corbin Knight, I think, is their number three center right now. I think, Ryan, you can pencil him not only for this fall, but maybe for the next 10 years if he likes it here. Because I think he's one of those guys that's going to be a very reliable center. He may not score 30 goals, but he might be a guy that is a 15 and 20 guy that is a plus 10 on the season and wins 57% of his faceoffs. And they'll take that any day.
It's phenomenal. I think that is the best trade Jay Feaster's made since he arrived, and obviously the returns haven't shown. The fourth-round pick's not even until next year's draft, but this is a guy you got for a fourth-rounder next year, which you wouldn't even know about for probably 4 or 5 years, for a guy that steps onto the roster now. I mean, you can't beat that in a trade, can you?
No, you can't, and it was a good deal, and I know they had to outbid the Edmonton Oilers. I know it came down to Corbin having to decide, is it going to be Edmonton or is it going to be Calgary? And he just had no fit in Edmonton in their mind, and they might have underestimated Corbin Knight a little bit up there. I know they created hockey and all that stuff, but they might have underestimated him a little bit, and yes, it was a good trade. When you get that kind of player that I think is going to be a very consistent, diligent performer that is cut from the right kind of cloth, that's a hell of a trade for Jay Feaster.
And I thought they invented that short on the top, long in the back haircut up there. It was hockey they invented in Edmonton?
Well, I'm not sure, but I understand they're very good at it.
Other impressions that were made. I mean, I thought one of the guys that came way off the board for me that was way off the board at the draft was Tim Harrison. And again, anyone who wanted a free shot at the Flames was taking one when Tim Harrison was picked. You couldn't find a scouting report on him, but there he was in camp, and you couldn't help but notice him every time he was in scrimmage.
So give them credit, right? There's another example, Ryan, where you give them credit in terms of their analysis, what kind of player he was. And that's where John Weisbrod and his entire crew, you can Todd Button and his group of scouts, but their analysis of him, what they were looking for, it just goes to show you that they aren't all dumb, that they perhaps have a little bit of a plan. And he was very, very good. And he might even get better. He's one of those kids that really could surprise you along the way. When you stand 6'4", it may grow a little bit more, plus have that little nasty side to you, and you put a year of Colgate University in him, he might be even that much better next year. So you're right. For that late a pick, that looks pretty good.
Okay, so goaltending. Two questions, one for the present and one for the future. The present question would be, how do you see things shaking out with the big club in the fall? And the future question would be, do you think Laurent Brossoit or John Gillies is the guy that brings this team back into the playoffs down the road?
Well, you know what? Isn't that a good point? Because you have to know that Gillies is going to play probably at least 2 more years of university hockey. I don't think it's going to be one. I think it'll be two. And what's he like when he's age 21? They really like him now, and he showed a lot of reasons for that like in the camp. I think Laurent Brossoit has seen the bottom, and what I mean by that is he's been dealt some very difficult blows in his life. I got to know him last year during the Western Hockey League playoffs a little bit, and he's got the kind of attitude that is, it's like that hell or high water slogan of the Calgary Stampede. He's not going to let a little thing put him down. And that's the kind of guy that's going to be a fighter. He may take 2 years of the American Hockey League, and that's where he should probably be, a starter in the American League if he can get it done. But I like him over the long term because I just think he doesn't quit at any time.
As for the fall and the Flames, that's probably a tougher question. Wow.
Yeah, isn't that a dandy? Boy, don't you wish you and I had that answer? We could probably make a lot of money on that baby.
We wouldn't be talking now. We'd be on an island sipping Mai Tais, I think.
We got to find out what Kerry Ramo is. Is he going to be an NHL-caliber goaltender? Can they protect him? Will Red Oberá actually be an NHL player? He's on a two-way, so he can play in the American League as well. My sense is that's where he'll be. I think in a perfect world, if they had to prognosticate right now, they'd probably look at Ramo and McDonald in the net this year, starting out the season, and hoping that happens. That's what they need to have happen, to be quite frank with you. They need that. And Red Oberá, who knows? He might be a guy that gets enough of North American experience, understands the ice surface a little bit more. If he does that in Abbotsford, perhaps he'll be a guy they can call upon from time to time. But I think it's Rommel. I think it's McDonald. I think in a perfect world, they could go 40-41-41 as far as games played, but it's never perfect in the NHL, is it?
Never. Roger, hey, great seeing you up at Winsport the last couple days. Always appreciate the insights. Bang on. And that step back and take a little more time to view these prospects. Jankowski's a project. He's still a project. Great work, and we appreciate you joining us today here on The Big Show.
Appreciate your time, Ryan.